Knesset will not be the same as the reasons behind that time that Boris Yeltsin wouldn't get off a plane. It is, however, a moment of quiet magnificence, possibly quite loud magnificence, once the speech is delivered, and some people seem to be struggling to accept that a terrible person can do a wonderful thing. We may turn our attention to that question a little later in the programme, or we may focus on the question of what justice will look like. As the families of the released hostages, and they have now all been freed, celebrate in ways that are almost impossible to imagine, what of the people still mourning loss?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the last remaining living hostages held in Gaza have now been released by Hamas. It means 20 captives have been handed over this morning, and some are now back in Israel to be reunited with their families. The family of one of them, Nimrod Cohen, watched the moment he was freed on TV. Israel will release hundreds of Palestinian detainees in exchange as part of Donald Trump's ceasefire deal. The US president is set to address the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, before a peace summit in Egypt later today. LBC's Matt Fry says it's a whirlwind tour of the Middle East.
He's a very popular man in Israel because he's managed to break the logjam. Whether you like Netanyahu or you hate him, and the country is pretty roughly divided on that matter in a very visceral way, it is Trump's juggernaut diplomacy that has managed to make today happen. Yeah, there's no doubt about that whatsoever.
Stay with LBC for the latest and follow live developments on the LBC app. In other news, two men have been charged with the murder in prison of the former Lost Prophets singer Ian Watkins. The 48-year-old, who was serving a 29-year term for child sex offences, was pronounced dead at HMP Wakefield on Saturday morning. Rashid Gedel and Samuel Dodsworth, who are 25 and 43 respectively, are due to appear at Leeds Magistrates Court. Donald Trump has threatened to provide Ukraine with long-range missiles if Russia does not stop its invasion. Moscow has expressed extreme concern about the possibility of Kiev being given access to the Tomahawk system. Buckingham Palace has announced the German president will make a state visit to the UK in December. Frank-Walter Steinmeier has accepted an invitation from the King. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 30 points at 94.58. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny in Scotland, a high of 18 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. There are few things more exciting in the world of media than live broadcasting. There are, however, some moments that do not really lend themselves to it, and those moments are best encapsulated as when scheduled things don't happen on schedule. It is now approximately 1 hour since we were expecting the President of the United States, Donald. Everyone started adding the J lately, haven't they? Donald J. Trump. I'm James E. O'Brien. To address the Knesset in Israel, and he is yet to do so. Perhaps because events have been unfolding in the interim. Every living hostage has now been released. That is something that has been, I think, confirmed beyond all reasonable doubt. And, of course, the question of what he's likely to say in the course of the speech is probably quite easy to answer. It will be, and, you know, sticks in the craw of some people. I'm delighted to say it doesn't stick in my craw. I wondered whether it might, but he will be doing a richly deserved lap of honour. There is, of course, room for nuance and interpretation, which is where we generally come in on this programme, and that is what we will be trying to do shortly. But in the interim, my job really is just to sort of burble in a constructive fashion until this speech actually begins, with no current indication of either why it hasn't begun. The world's television cameras are fixed upon the podium, behind which three Israeli flags hang. And I don't think anybody there has got any better idea of when it is likely to start than I have. And those will probably be the two ways into it. I may be a bit early for the when an awful person does something wonderful conversation, although I notice an awful lot of people struggling with that. And the reason why I mention it is because rarely do the dangers of footballification feel as acute as they feel today. Because you want to be generous at a time like this to somebody who is, by most sort of objective accounts, at least morally and politically reprehensible. And you should be generous, but do you start trying a bit too hard to be generous because you're so conscious of the consequences of letting your judgments and your prejudices influence your reaction? Or is there a rather large problem, a rather large issue of what happens next? Justice, if you like, or atonement, retribution, or responsibility? Are we all going to just draw a line under what has happened with some Hamas leaders, albeit that the peak of the pyramid, the pinnacle of the pyramid, was taken out a year ago this week? That's one of the reasons why questions about how it has taken so long are still resonating, but particularly through Israel, where the a speech given by, I think, Steve Witkoff over the weekend was cheering Donald Trump's name to the rafters, the assembled crowds, and booed the mention of Benjamin Netanyahu. But the question of what Chapter 2 looks like, presuming, as we will do throughout the course of this morning and hopefully this week, presuming that the peace deal holds, that the ceasefire agreement holds, and that we begin to tick off all 20 of the points on it, then Hamas leaders, the remaining Hamas leaders, are ideally to be removed entirely from the equation and to live out the rest of their days in relative luxury in Qatar. And Israeli leaders, or the Israeli leader, who is, of course, still wanted on war crime allegations by the International Criminal Court, will also not be held responsible for anything that has happened since October the 7th in Gaza. And we may get on to that. Or you may tell me that it's too early, and today is just the day for celebration, contemplation and commemoration of the hostages who haven't come home and the tens of thousands of people who have been killed in Gaza. But the time now is 7 minutes after 10. If I set up a phone in now and you ring in and then we cross live to the Knesset, I think that works, doesn't it? Because I've got no way. I could literally say in the next 30 seconds, oh, and now we're crossing live to Israel for the speech from Donald Trump addressing Knesset. Or I could really just carry on blathering for 30 minutes. So I think it's in all our interests for me to set up a phone in. So there are two ways into it, and I really hope you join in today. The first is now you've had time for a little bit more contemplation. We went in cold on this on the show last week, but we've had an opportunity to read plenty of coverage. I'd recommend the New York Times is very good at the moment. The Times of Israel is very good at the moment. Haaretz, Israeli media organization, always provides a very liberal-leaning interpretation of events. You've had time to process where we are and what is likely to transpire, and I think I just want to know what you're doing with it, where you are now, how you feel, how you greet this news. I think we'll do a side order of somebody terrible doing something wonderful. You can't deny the awfulness of Donald Trump. Some of the allegations, or some of the facts, established facts that have been established back home in the United States of America are absolutely extraordinary. Deploying troops on streets in American cities where the government, the local governors don't want any troops on streets in American cities, telling barefaced and blatant lies about warfare and violence and crime, setting up or softening up the population, the electorate perhaps, for incredible injustices. The bribery, an extraordinary bribery allegation involving one of his senior appointments, just sort of waltzing away with a bag full of $50,000. All of this stuff is unfolding as we speak. But I don't think you can let any of that knock any of the shine over what has been achieved in the Middle East. It's like an almost, it's a surreal aligning of planets. You know that his narcissism and his addiction to self-aggrandizement has played a huge part in the process. You know that no American president possibly ever would have thrown Benjamin Netanyahu under the bus in the way that Donald Trump has done. And you also know that the result of all of those variables, all of those spinning plates, is about the best available result. I'm just seeing some footage now of Trump and Netanyahu entering the Knesset together, so hopefully that speech will begin imminently. Clive Myrie looking excited on the BBC, so that speaks to the possibility of some movement soon. But the bottom line here, and I'm a little bit surprised by people struggling to see this, in this moment, at this point, this was the best available, the most unbelievably superior settlement that could possibly have been achieved by anybody. That's my view. I may invite you to challenge that shortly. But the idea that it, because it could have happened sooner, you shouldn't be celebrating now. I'm told that Donald Trump is handing out MAGA caps to members of the Knesset now, which I normally would have checked that my producer wasn't swinging the lead and trying to get me into trouble on live radio. But it's Donald Trump. Of course he's handing out MAGA caps to members of the Knesset, all of which speaks to the likelihood of the speech actually beginning soon. And we will, of course, take it entirely live. But I wonder if we'll get stuck into that afterwards. This is as good as it could possibly have been, and nobody else could have achieved it. Discuss. If you want to book your place early on the switchboard, the number you need is 0345 6060973. As things stand, with all of the available facts, both in the moment of the plan, which, yes, it was very, very similar to something that Joe Biden had on the table 18 months ago, and yes, the ceasefire deal that kicked in January was breached by Israel, and yes, there are all sorts of questions about why Donald Trump didn't move sooner to tell Benjamin Netanyahu that the gig was up, but none of that happened. In the moment that we currently inhabit, this could not have been a better resolution. This could not have been a better settlement. And I wonder why some people struggle to accept that. I can introduce the quibbles even now, and I can introduce the questions even now about whether or not it's going to be troubling to see people responsible for the deaths and the incarcerations that we've witnessed to sort of walk away scot-free. I think it probably is, but that is often what peace arrangements look like. Northern Ireland would be an example of that, although, of course, in Northern Ireland there were terrorists on both sides who achieved or received impunity as a consequence of the peace settlement. That doesn't fully reflect what is happening in the Middle East, but the fact that all the living hostages have been released means that the worst fears of Palestinian people are now to be properly examined. Once all the hostages have been released, will Israel leave them in peace? To which the answer previously, in many people's minds, has been no, it won't. Some members of Netanyahu's cabinet made it quite clear that releasing, in fact, Netanyahu on occasion made it quite clear that releasing all the hostages wouldn't affect a cessation of hostilities. But we're about to find out, and that's where Donald Trump's contribution has been close to unique. That nobody else could have put the frighteners on Netanyahu to a sufficient degree where he believed that Donald Trump would, you have to presume, the biggest gun on the table, as it were, you have to presume that it would involve a withdrawal of military support for Israel. And the withdrawal of military support for Israel from the United States of America is a sort of game-over scenario. I'm going to take a little break now. I did warn you at the top of the hour that this was one of those moments where my job is essentially to keep the seats warm before much more important people sit in them and begin their speeches. But we know that they are they're in the building. You can tell because the President of the United States is handing out hats. And we know that the speech will begin imminently. So I'm going to risk a little break and then come back after that, hopefully, with a speech from the President of the United States to the Israeli Knesset.
LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker, just say, play LBC.
15 minutes after 10, and Donald Trump's set to address the Knesset very, very shortly, but I could be here in 2 hours saying that as well before Sheila assumes the position and starts adopting a similar holding tactic. So let's try and encourage... Phil writes, I love that you're pretending you don't do a 30-minute monologue at the beginning of every show. Phil, my normal monologues are focused and laser-like in their delivery. This is genuinely an exercise in filling space, and quite rightly, because there's nothing more important than waiting for this speech marking this extraordinary cessation of hostilities. And that's what I want you to talk to me about. And I hope you've got the wherewithal to ring in. I can read out a few texts that are quibbling about my description of it as the best available arrangement. In this moment, at 16 minutes after 10, on Monday the October the 13th, 2025, there is nothing better, there was nothing better available. I think I've proved to you over the last years that my understanding of what drives Donald Trump is faultless. My clear comprehension of what it is about him that appeals to people and allows them to close their eyes to his hideous conduct, both privately and politically, doesn't really brook any criticism. I've been absolutely crystal clear, indefatigable in my critique of his personal hideousness, which means it carries extra weight when I turn around to you today and say, this could not be better. This could not be better. You're allowed to agree with me. And, for one day only, you're allowed to disagree with me. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need. I don't want to push you, but you can't say, oh, but this could have happened sooner and this might happen in the future. As things stand today, and listen, if we have to resign from this position subsequently, we will do so without any hesitation whatsoever. If things begin to fall apart, if things crumble, if it turns out things we've taken in good faith should not have been taken in good faith at all. But today, at this point in history, the history of this benighted region, this was and is the best available resolution. Agree or disagree? 0345-6060-973. And listen, as long as you're not rude, please tell me why you don't agree that this is about as good as anybody could have hoped for. Hostage families are poised to welcome their loved ones back into the bosoms of their families. Palestinian people who have suffered untold horrors, genocidal atrocities, are now confident, quietly confident, cautiously confident that there will be no more deaths among their numbers. The business of sifting through the rubble and watching the death toll rise inexorably is going to be absolutely bloody and horrible. But in this moment, at this time, there was nothing better on the table. Aid trucks are pouring in to Gaza daily, 600 a day set to pour in. Netanyahu's attempt to put a stranglehold on those points of ingress, his successful attempts appear to have fallen apart completely over the course of the last few days. With history what it is, and with reality what it is, and with the current situation what it is, nobody can, to my mind, make a compelling case for things could have been better. Things could have been more successful. Things could have been superior. And that, perhaps, is why some people are really, really struggling with the identity of the man who is not single-handedly responsible. Qatar played a part, Turkey played a part, Steve Witkoff has been clear that the United Kingdom government played a part, even though Mike Huckabee, the US ambassador to Israel, appears unaware of this. And to be honest, he would be, wouldn't he? But Witkoff's under no illusions about the role played by Jonathan Pohl, who was also involved in the Good Friday Agreement. So you know that the moving parts remain to be examined, at least in part. But I can't think at this moment as a single negative, except the fact that you and I really, really, really don't like Donald Trump and his well-recorded toxicity, abusing disabled people, boasting about being a sex offender, lying about election results, quietly willing on an armed insurrection against his own seat of government in America, lying now about what's unfolding in other American cities, Democrat-run American cities. I need to keep hitting this because people are accusing me of being sycophantic towards him. It could not be more true, but you can't. This is footballification. This is what I've been talking to you about for the best part now of a decade. You can't let your scarf, in this case your anti-Trump scarf, be knotted so tightly around your neck that it's cut off the flow of blood to your head. You simply can't do that, because if you do that, then you cannot actually objectively analyse what is happening today. You cannot objectively analyse what is happening today. And what is happening today is that the hostages are being returned to their families, aid trucks are pouring into Gaza, and the bombing has stopped. The ceasefire is holding. And nobody could have achieved that unless they were prepared to say to Benjamin Netanyahu, if you don't sign up to this now, then we will do such things. What they are, I know not, but they shall be the terror of the earth, as King Lear might have said. But I imagine it would involve a serious reduction in the amount of military and financial support that Israel receives from the United States of America. And without that on the table, he was going to carry on forever. His political survival hinged upon it. His cabinet members, many of his cabinet members, absolutely demanded it. It was something that was available to him at the beginning of this year. You listen to one of the most famous Israeli negotiators in history, he says it was available last September. But the will to push Netanyahu into signing it was not there until this extraordinarily heady cocktail of self-interest, narcissism, and utter inconsistency. Trump's ability to say something on Monday and then contradict it completely on Tuesday is part of the jigsaw that has been assembled in this place. It's also cause for pessimism, of course. He could change his mind again next week, but I think the stakes are too high and the business is too entrenched for that to happen now. So you're left with this very simple conclusion. He's an awful, awful man, a terrible, terrible politician, a terrible, terrible human being, an effective politician in many ways. And on this occasion, in this moment, he's achieved more than anybody else could have done. And it is the best available resolution to all of the known knowns. I'm going to read one quick message and then I'm going to take a call because I quite like this. Is it from Steve who said, I just turned in. It's a bit like I've tuned into an episode of Just a Minute on Radio 4. This is from Stuart, albeit with rather more repetition than would be allowed. I've already explained what my job is now, so I'll take a call. That's the best way of ensuring that the speech actually begins, because as soon as I take a call, Donald Trump will get to his feet, clear his throat, and start telling the Knesset in Israel how absolutely wonderful he, Donald Trump, is. David's in Bayswater. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, yeah, James, great to speak to you again. Yeah, so I really, really am very happy that the killing has stopped, but sadly, I think it's a stay of execution for the Palestinians. Because if you look at the long arc of history, look at the Balfour Declaration, that was imposed upon the Palestinians by white men. And this is an exact
I said it several times, as Stuart has pointed out. Sorry. I've broken all the rules of repetition today, but I did say we're talking exclusively about this much. So what, in the context of what could have been agreed in the last 72 hours, what could be better?
Well, I'm looking at it in a slightly different way. I think.
Well, you've ended up on my show. So what in the last the last 72 hours, what could have been agreed that would be better than this?
Well, I think the peace plan is very flawed, and he could have put in certain extras which would have made it far more convincing.
If
First of all, he could recognize the Palestinian state, which would have won the mind.
Netanyahu wouldn't have signed. Next.
Well, we don't know that.
Yes, we do.
You're suggesting things that could have made it better.
No, of course Netanyahu couldn't have signed that. You know that, and I know that. So what else are we going to try?
Okay, then, right. He could have talked about the West Bank settlement and said, we're working towards stopping them.
But he's negotiated a ceasefire between Gaza and Israel. So in terms of what can be achieved in that very specific context at this very specific moment, you've come up with two things that aren't relevant.
Okay, right. Let me try one more then.
The third time lucky, David.
Third time lucky, yeah. Okay, he could have included Palestinians in the plan for the optics to be better and to get more support from the Palestinians, because they are the source of Hamas.
But they've signed. So the argument that he should have done this or he should have done that is a little bit moot.
But I'm saying
because he's done whatever needed to be done to get all the signatures on the document.
But as an external observer,
you can't do it. You can't. I worried I'd be like you when this first started happening.
Like me.
Look, the man is hideous. He's absolutely hideous. He's a danger to democracy, decency, all of those things. But no one could have done a better job than this.
I don't agree with you, James.
I know you don't, but we've examined the reasons for your lack of agreement with me, and they're all flawed.
No, they're not.
Yes, they
are. They might be your opinions. James, you just don't want to see any merit in what I've said because you're putting forward a particular point of view.
The West Bank was not part of the negotiations, so you can't.
So you can't have that.
Recognizing a Palestinian state, pretty much everybody else has done, which may have been part of the process that pushed Netanyahu into the position he finds himself in. But there's no way Donald Trump could have demanded, could have recognized the Palestinian state because Netanyahu wouldn't have signed. And what was the third one?
The third one was he could have included Palestinians
That's a wait and see pie, isn't it? Right. I mean, there's going to have to be Palestinians involved in the government of the Palestinian territory.
Yeah, but who? People whom he chooses, who will be supporters of America and who will do as he bids. I don't know that.
Of
course, he's not going to choose anyone who's against America, James. Come on.
You mean like Hamas? You want Hamas to be involved in the government?
I didn't say Hamas.
Well, who then?
I didn't say that. But he's never going to choose anyone that's against American interests. Of course not. And they're going to be pro-Israel. There's no doubt about it.
But in the moment,
he's in control.
And they're not going to be pro-Israel if they're Palestinian people. I'll ring you back in 6 months, and I'll buy you a wagon wheel.
Right, James, honestly, I really do. I want the death to have stopped forever. So I really hope you're right.
Okay, good.
But I disagree fundamentally.
That's absolutely fine. And would it be fair of me to suggest?
Yes.
That there are no circumstances whatsoever in which you would have greeted anything announced by this man with unalloyed optimism and joy.
That would be true because I don't trust his motives. I think he's always
worth. And somehow we're coming at it all from similar positions and arriving up in completely different places. Because I, David, am glass half full. And you are glass half empty, which is probably a slightly unfair analysis of the situation. But the idea that there could have been something better on the table is one that I would like to examine today, because nothing there, I don't think, and you may think I was a bit unfair with David, but West Bank is not part of these negotiations. You could argue that it should be, but that is not relevant to getting the Israeli army to stop bombing Gaza and to get Hamas to release the remaining hostages. Recognition of a Palestinian state, I probably went in a bit hard. If Donald Trump had recognized a Palestinian state, I'm fairly confident that Benjamin Netanyahu wouldn't have signed anything, whatever the threat to his personal or political future might have been. So you can talk to me a little bit more about that. We'll put that one in brackets as a possibility. And then Palestinian involvement in government of Palestinian territories. I just think It's a given. Of course that has to happen. Under the 20-point plan, it's in place. But first of all, you've got this weird holding pattern that involves Tony Blair. And that's something we may get stuck into a little later. Tony Blair, not got the best track record in that part of the world. And yet, if you were to be looking through the lens of Middle Eastern countries, he's regarded a lot more positively than he is domestically. So he's there as a private individual, someone who's got extraordinarily strong relationships with all sorts of senior players and extremely powerful people in the Middle East. So getting Tony Blair in the room may also turn out to be a good thing. But as long as the room is temporary and as long as some form of home rule, if you like, is established, I don't know. It's coming up to 10:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm going to take some headlines and we could be breaking records. An hour and a half in now to the postponement or the delay in the speech that Donald Trump was prepared. I mean, maybe he's gone back to the van. He's gone back to the minibus to get a bunch more MAGA hats. The crowd was bigger than he was expecting. He's run out of hats. He's now gone back. This is me speculating. Please don't think that this is in any way reportage or factual. He's gone back to the minibus round the back, the hat bus, they call it, and he is replenishing his MAGA hat stocks. Imagine that. Imagine thinking, let's take loads of MAGA hats with us. Oh, boy. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The last remaining living hostages held in Gaza have now been released by Hamas. It means 20 captives have been handed over this morning, and some are now back in Israel to be reunited with their families. Israel will free hundreds of Palestinian detainees in exchange as part of Donald Trump's ceasefire deal. The president is set to address the Israeli parliament before a peace summit in Egypt. And two men have been charged with the murder of a convicted paedophile at HMP Wakefield. Ian Watkins, the former frontman of the band Lost Prophets, died after being attacked on Saturday morning. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
I like my private details on a need-to-know basis. In other words, I need to know them and you don't. That's why I use Bitdefender whenever I'm connected, working tirelessly in the background to protect me across all my devices, keeping my digital identity confidential, on the down low, on the hush hush, trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:33 is the time. I always remember, was it Henry Kissinger who got the Nobel Peace Prize after they'd sort of bombed Laos during the Vietnam War, unconnected territory? And it's often held up by people on the left, and I don't use that pejoratively. It's often held up as an example of how hypocritical everything is and how terrible everything is. And it's a pretty grim thing to reflect upon. But the reality of diplomacy is that it doesn't lend itself to the kind of diet that our modern media demands. You know, you have to sometimes praise horrible people, and sometimes you have to disappoint good people. You have to do things that you don't want to do in service of the greater good. And I'm struck by how hard some people find it to process these simple facts. You know, it is as if you either subscribe to the idea that everything Donald Trump does is absolutely awful, or, because he essentially greenlights your racism, every single thing he does is either, well, it's certainly excusable, and you're quite prepared almost all of the time to pretend that it's brilliant as well. And that is all they do, these leaders, is they excuse discrimination. They encourage, whether it's racism or homophobia or whatever other demonization of an other is involved. It's all they ever do. That's why it's so intoxicating. But you can't... you can't really analyze difficult situations through those lenses. Donald Trump is a terrible person. He has done a wonderful thing. Full stop. Discuss. 0345 6060 973. They shuffled the chairs around a moment ago, I'm told. Is that, have we confirmed that, Elliot? The chairs were shuffled around a little. You're not feeding me duff information, so we got a little bit optimistic for a moment that they were about to appear on the podium, but as it stands, the word shortly is still doing an awful lot of heavy lifting, an hour and 35 minutes after this speech was due to begin. I quite like this. Two responses to the earlier caller that we took from David in Bayswater. This, I think, directed at him rather than me. Just swallow your pride and kiss the tangerine man's feet. And that's from Matt. This from Chris. This is exactly why the ceasefire will fail. David is right. A two-state solution had to be mentioned, and Trump wants all the credit, so he didn't include it. But it couldn't have been agreed to, not by Netanyahu, whose entire political career has been opposed to a two-state solution. It's why he offered tacit support to Qatar's funding of Hamas, because they too were diametrically opposed to a two-state solution. So I don't know, but I'm fairly confident that they couldn't have signed up for that. If you wanted them to sign up, this was the best available deal on any table ever. Kaz is in St. Albans. Kaz, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I mean, it's great a ceasefire has taken place. The question is, was Trump forced, was his hand forced to do it, or did he do it out of the goodness of his heart? And I think his
Hang on a minute. There's three, four, five more options than that. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I think Israel pushed America too far when they attacked Qatar. The repercussions of that were the Pakistani-Saudi defense pact. Yeah. And I think America was in deep trouble to the point where they were going to lose their largest military base outside of America, which is in Qatar. And I think, you know, that's probably had more weight on him doing what he did.
Oh, I'm sure otherwise, it played a part. But, I mean, you're crediting him with a kind of rational mind. I think it's just as likely that he was cross that they attacked the people who gave him a shiny new plane.
Yeah, it could well be. Yeah, I could agree with that.
Knowing what we know about him, the idea that he's going to be responding to geopolitics and the international situation, also given that a large part of his campaigning platform was to take America out of the equation of foreign wars and foreign policy and concentrate on America first. That is literally the slogan under which he's campaigned. So I think both are true. I think that the attack upon Qatar was absolutely crucial, but not necessarily for the reasons that it might have been under a previous president. I also think, Kaz, that Netanyahu thought Trump was going to let him do whatever he wanted forever.
Yes, yeah, until they did what they did in Qatar, which was the red line. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, moving forward, what happens with the ICJ and the ICC now that this war has come to an end, you know, and what the repercussions will be for Netanyahu.
Yes, it will be.
Otherwise, we're going to show double standards across the world. And I don't think, with the way things are with Ukraine, Russia, Putin, you know, it's not going to send a good.
No, I need to double check, but I think that the Hamas leader named on those international warrants is already dead. So there's no sort of quid pro quo in play there. And I don't know. I mean, the International Criminal Court sort of has full jurisdiction, doesn't it? No, I mean, you can ignore it It doesn't have bailiffs or whatever the international equivalent would be. You can go around and kick a foreign leader's door in and drag him off to The Hague. But I don't know how that works, whether whatever is agreed and signed today, the warrants remain, don't they? You can't, Donald Trump can't cancel them out. So it will be interesting. But in the moment, this is the question that somewhat simplistically I'm hitting everybody over the head with today. Could anything have been agreed realistically in the last 72 hours that would be better than what has been agreed?
I don't think it could have been. Look, it's great. We've got a ceasefire. A lot of, you see the pictures of droves of people coming the way. You know, it's almost biblical, isn't it, where the seas open and the people walk through.
Yes.
When you see those images coming out of Gaza. So, you know, the first step in many, but, yeah, the bombing has stopped and people are now going to heal and recover on both sides. And I think that can only be a good thing. Could it have been done earlier? Most
yes.
certainly. But, hey, it is what it is. And
better late than never. Better late than never. Yeah, and the fact that it could have been done earlier, it may knock gloss off, but it doesn't undermine the fundamental point that this is as good as it could conceivably have got at this point in history. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. And he talks of biblical scenes, biblical imagery, and my goodness me, it isn't just the humanity, it's the devastation. You saw these phalanxes of humans making their way through hellscapes, bombed to obliteration, going home is the correct terminology, but there's no actual home to go back to. Rebuilding now is going to be absolutely huge, and the death toll is going to rocket daily as people begin sifting through the rubble and digging through what remains of the Gaza Strip. The scale of the obliteration, we already know 70,000 people or thereabouts are dead. Huge numbers of women and children contained within those. Some people still, even now, inflating the lie that the Israeli administration did everything it could to minimize civilian casualties, or that this was somehow necessitated by events. And that process, I don't know. I mean, the idea that people there, mourning, grieving families, will be able to sort of draw lines, pick themselves up, dust themselves down and start all over again, I don't know. They're probably... there's probably a little bit too much optimism there. But again, that's a variable that doesn't change the central question. Buses now carrying Palestinian prisoners across into Gaza. Hundreds and hundreds of Palestinians due to be released. Some held, of course, without any trial or indeed charges being brought. Some convicted of hideous crimes, and they're getting released as well. 10:41 is the time. Could it have been any better? Is the question that I'm asking you while we wait for Donald Trump to address the Israeli Knesset. All living hostages handed back to Israel. Palestinian prisoners crossing into Gaza. Ceasefire currently holding. And if I said what's not to like, it would sound horribly glib, because we have seen genocide in Gaza. Some people still very uncomfortable with that word, but I don't know what other word you can use to describe that intent to destroy a population. And if not to destroy a population, then to rob them of the means of sustaining their own lives, whether you're attacking hospitals and healthcare, or you're stopping fuel and energy and aid getting into the region. The criteria are internationally established and have been largely fulfilled. But, of course, even that horror, even that horrible truth doesn't detract from the fact that this was the best, literally the best available option. And you don't often get to say that. Paul's in Woodford Green. Paul, what do you think?
I totally agree with you. Oh. And what I would think is, when you say, don't let the good get in the way of the perfect.
Yes.
So I'm not a Trump supporter. I think he's an idiot character, an idiot politician. But... this has ceased the war. No, it started a ceasefire. It's not stopped the war, because nobody's agreed not to go back to fighting. So what it's done is the best that could possibly be. And yes, he didn't deserve the Nobel Peace Prize this time, But maybe next year, if he pushes on this programme...
If the ceasefire is still in place next year, I think he'll be a shoo-in for it, won't he?
Well, not necessarily, because a ceasefire isn't a stop. It's only a pause in the war. Let's stop the war, because enough people on both sides have died.
Yeah, but a year from now, if there hasn't been a resumption of hostilities, then that's peace. That's a year of peace.
Yes, I totally agree, but you've still got to go through the other points of the 20 plan. And as you're rightly pointed out, neither side want to go down that route, but perhaps he can force it through. And that's what he's done in this instance. So even though I don't like the guy, I have to admire what he's achieved.
Yes, I like that your language. I admire what he has achieved. I mean, it's a bit like, I mean, you think of someone absolutely awful from history, Paul. Someone truly and indisputably awful, like Hitler. Stalin or Hitler or someone like that. What if they had discovered a cure for cancer? Would we all be sitting here stroking our chin going, well, I'm not taking that cure. I'm not letting any of my children have that treatment.
No, of course we wouldn't. Of course we wouldn't. We take, as you say, the good over, you know...
Don't let the perfect... Well, except that this is close to... In the context of what was available in this window of history, this probably is close to perfect, actually. I mean, you can start quibbling about whether it could and should have been done sooner. Spoiler alert, yes and yes. You can start, as you and I are both minded to do, reminding each other of the hideousness of the man who has overseen it all. And, of course, people are ignoring everybody who did the really hard work. Steve Witkoff, the US envoy, going on the record to essentially criticize and discipline the Mike Huckabee, the US ambassador to Israel, who questioned a British government minister's analysis at the weekend of the role that we have played in this. So Witkoff's gone on the record to say, I would like to acknowledge the vital role of the United Kingdom in assisting and coordinating efforts that have led us to this historic day in Israel. In particular, I want to recognize the incredible input and tireless efforts of National Security Advisor Jonathan Powell. So again, there is a case for a defense of Keir Starmer's decisions to cozy up to Donald Trump, despite the fact that he must privately find him as repellent as all right-thinking, decent people do. Because that's what diplomacy is. That's what the national interest is. And you might not like it, but on this occasion, perhaps more than any other in the second term, it works. 10:46 is the time.
This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic. And refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:49 is the time. It looks as though Donald Trump's appearance at the Israeli Knesset is about to commence. We're in that curious hinterland of live coverage where just the sight of a door opening is a cause for excitement and sends ripples through rooms. But certainly I think that we are now crossing live imminently. His daughter turned up a moment ago, Ivanka Trump, and received loud cheers. No, it doesn't appear that they're making their way to the stage yet, but the gathered assembly is now standing room only, literally. It's usually a figure of speech, of course, but there are people standing in the sort of alleyways between the seats waiting for this to begin. My sense is that it will be imminent, but I kind of thought that 20 minutes ago as well. But we shall cross immediately that it begins. I don't quite see any sign of the major players in the room where it happens at this moment. So bear with. Phone lines are still open. The question of whether or not this could have been any better is the one that we're examining together today. And listen, there are what-ifs and better late thans, but in simple terms, in this particular window of history, this was the best available settlement. It could have been done sooner, and that would have saved thousands upon thousands of Palestinian lives. Nobody's making light of that. But it could only be done with Benjamin Netanyahu aware that he had no choice but to sign. And I'm not sure anybody but Donald Trump, with his commitment and loyalty to nothing except Donald Trump, could have actually achieved that. So historians of the future will pore over the question of whether or not it could and should have been achieved sooner. They still pore over the question of whether or not Japan would have surrendered in the Second World War without the use of atomic weapons. That's what historians do. We're not really in the business of history yet here. We're in the business of the here and now. And it's precisely the here and now that renders this settlement, in my view, the best available. 0345 6060973. Richard's in Battersea. Richard, what would you like to say?
Oh, James. Hello, mate. Your question was along the lines of, is this a great deal? I think you've got to accept the fact that the deal is better than the situation in the preceding day.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Yeah.
But even after the beginnings of this, which was some kind of declaration of a ceasefire, even after that, the IDF was actually carried on bombing Gaza City with F-16s, didn't it? So,
well, before the ceasefire was signed.
No, I think they did actually carry out. I heard on LBC, I might be wrong, but I can remember hearing that that happened. But anyway, back to the point. The point is, you, I think, said some minutes ago that this appeared to be a holding position.
No, the government of Gaza will be a holding position. So Donald Trump is the sort of chairman of the board with people like Tony Blair involved as well. It's in, as far as I'm aware, it's in the 20-point plan, but there's no suggestion that that would be the permanent status quo, the permanent solution. And I mean, apropos nothing in particular, Donald Trump is going to have quite a few problems with big time MAGA supporters back in the United States who don't think that their country should be taking really, really senior roles in foreign business anymore. But no, the holding pattern is the temporary government, the interim government of Gaza.
Okay. I mean, my idea about this is that the Trump team decided to drag the Israelis as far along the line as they could actually get to at that moment.
Yes.
Right?
That's exactly what happened.
And so, in that respect, the overall situation is also a holding position, because the wider peace deal is still there waiting to be actually agreed. I mean, I saw a little bit of BBC 24 footage when I was in the pub last night of the Gaza destruction. I was truly shocked.
There was nothing funny about that.
It did look a bit like Hiroshima after the bomb.
Except the buildings aren't standing.
No, there were, in that famous shot of Hiroshima, there was one building left standing, wasn't there?
Mm. Anyway, I mean, it's a hellscape. I think you've been my lucky charm, though. I think he's entered the room now. He's about to speak. In simple terms, through the window that we're looking at these events, what could have been better than where we are now, even if it is, as you say, some sort of holding position?
Well, they must have been a very delicate situation, because they had to take it as far as they could without Netanyahu
walking away. I don't know that he could. We may talk to Noga about that a little later, but now I think we will cross live to the Knesset, because I want you to get some of the atmosphere as well as the words. So the first thing you will hear will be rapturous applause and music. You are listening to LBC, where the President of the United States, Donald Trump, is poised to address the Knesset. The standing ovation you can hear in the background will come to a close, at which point I presume the President will begin to speak. I think it's fair to say he is enjoying this moment very much.
The President is seeing Miriam Adelson there on the balcony.
He is having some members of the assembled crowd pointed out to him. I don't know for certain, but I imagine families of perhaps some of the hostages that have been released this morning, all 20 remaining living hostages released, it has been confirmed. And it's fair to say that Donald Trump is receiving a hero's welcome in the Knesset.
חברות וחברי הכנסת, היום יום שני, כ"א בתשרי התשפ"ו, 13 באוקטובר 2025, ואני מתכבד לפתוח...
That's the speaker of the House, Amir Ohana. Netanyahu not on the stage with Donald Trump and the speaker. The Israeli President Isaac Herzog is. So the introduction, the formalities being undertaken now. Moment of ceremony, as well as celebration.
I begin. This is a special meeting, therefore there will be no interpolations. If anyone does disturb it in any way, will be asked to leave. There will be no cautions. But yes, you can applaud during this meeting, as you've already seen. President Herzog and his wife, Michal, His Honor, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife, Sarah.
I have to intervene, because otherwise the emergency tape will kick in. But the A round of applause, rounds plural of applause, now reaching Benjamin Netanyahu, surrounded by loyalists in the Israeli Knesset. Interesting that the Speaker felt the need to caution against any dissent. I don't know if you picked up on that from the translator there, saying that people will be immediately removed if there are any interruptions or interventions.
The chairman of the opposition, Mr. Yair Lapid, and his wife, Lihi. Ministers, members of Knesset.
Recognition to Minister Ron Dermer, who led.
Special recognition to Ron Dermer, who led. He's saying it in English.
Special recognition to Minister Ron Dermer, who led the negotiation team on behalf of Israel. Thank you, Ron. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth.
They're all there. The entire Trump administration really absorbing the gratitude.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane.
And the credit for this historic peace deal. A few of you wondering where the Palestinian voices will be in this process, and I do understand why, but I think it's a slightly rhetorical or facetious question. This is a moment of
two key players: President Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff, who is here with his partner Lauren.
This is a celebration of a cessation of hostilities and the return of the hostages. So from the Palestinian perspective, the optimism hinges upon the hope that the carnage is now over.
And Jared Kushner, who is here with his wife Ivanka.
I see that this would be slightly, or perhaps profoundly uncomfortable listening for people heavily invested in the Palestinian losses. But the nature of the moment is such that the celebrations are, I mean, necessary.
And thank you guys for everything that you have done to bring about this day. Ambassador of the United States to Israel, my dear friend and my absolute favorite rock star, Mike Huckabee.
Well, it's certainly not somber, is it? When Donald Trump starts speaking, I'll shut up for the duration. There's a danger, of course, that he'll go on for an extremely long time, in which case we reserve the right to pull out.
Shagrir Israel be'Arzot Abrit, Yechiel Leiter. Shagrim ve'Rashay Mishlachot Zahot. Rosh Iriat Yerushalayim, Moshe Leon v'Rayato Stavit.
The mayor of Jerusalem, Mr. Moshe Leon, and his wife. All civil servants, all the chiefs of the security forces here and in the field. The chief of general staff, Eyal Zamir.
I don't know that we were expecting quite this roll call of recognition. I don't know whether or not there's a precedent for including wives and partners in the process as well, but a lot of you are telling me that you're a little uncomfortable with the celebratory
the police,
note
Daniel
of these
Levy.
Proceedings. I'm not here to comment on that. I'm just here to facilitate your ability to witness it.
The prison forces, but he's in the field. Yes, he's definitely one of those who's in the field. And the head of the fire extinguishing and fire brigade commission. The chair of the Mossad, David Barnea. The head of the GSF, David Zini, Major General in Reserves.
And this is perhaps a moment, given the extraordinarily celebratory tone of proceedings.
Gal Hirsch.
To reflect on that question that we haven't asked yet today, I think rightly.
Mayors and heads of regional authorities.
If this,
the director general.
If this settlement is a cause for such unbounded
Knesset,
celebration.
To organize this event, Moshe Edry, within a matter of 2 days, which normally takes a few months to organize. And the Secretary of the Knesset, Mr. Marzouk, and the legal advisor, Sagit Ofik, and the officer of the Knesset, Yuval Chen, the members of the executive of the Knesset, families of the hostages, bereaved families.
I'm still not entirely clear on when Donald Trump is likely to start speaking. I'm registering quite a lot of discomfort from people getting in touch with the program about the sort of victory parade flavor of proceedings. I'm watching it in exactly the same time scale that you are.
The civil servants and guests from here and abroad, forgive me if I will not remunerate everyone after this, but dear citizens of Israel, it is a very special honor for me to welcome with you our best friend that Israel has ever had in the White House. Welcome to Israel, welcome to Jerusalem, welcome to the Knesset, the President Donald J. Trump.
And I will leave you for a while in the hands of Donald Trump as he addresses the Knesset in the aftermath of the ceasefire settlement and hopefully peace deal that that he has presided over. I suspect this ovation will last for a while as well.
אדוני הנשיא, אני מבקש להודות לך.
President, I would like to thank you that you awarded us this privilege and right to be the first parliament outside the United States that you are visiting in this term of office. In such special days, I would like to say we honor you.
I think we probably went a little early, to be honest with you. But
this.
I do want to hear, and I know that you will want to hear what the President of the United States has to say.
Given
Jewish little
prayer.
Indication of how things
2,000 years ago, we were exiled by force from this country, from our land. But never did we ever forget Jerusalem in all those years. It is the beating heart of the Jewish heart when it was actually established 3,000 years, and we have been praying to be back here every year. You, 7 years, were the first person as the President of the United States. You recognized the sovereignty of Jerusalem as the capital. You fulfilled a promise that many presidents before you promised, but only you fulfilled that promise, and you transferred the embassy of the United States to the United, unified Jerusalem. Thank you, President Trump. Since the dawn of its existence, Israel has been forced to fight, but it always stretched its hand out in peace. And years ago, you, with Benjamin Netanyahu, you initiated the Abraham Accords. I was privileged to then serve.
I still don't know when the president is going to stop speaking, but there's no point pulling away until he does, because Murphy's Law dictates that as soon as we did that, he would stand up and actually start speaking. I can tell you that some people held in Israel, Palestinians held in Israel, have made their way into the West Bank now in buses. Footage of two Israeli brothers, Gali and Ziv Berman, embracing in the Gaza Strip after being released by Hamas in the first images to be released earlier this morning. Many buses, 600 buses, trucks full of aid due to now make their way into Gaza every single day, and every one of the 20 remaining living hostages has now been released.
Term of office already in 2011, you identified the danger embedded in a nuclear Iran, and you said in English,
is a major threat to our nation's national security interests.
I don't know how choreographed this is. I don't even know how much would have been cleared in advance with the White House. But
that threat on the United States, it means on the entire free world. Your consistent stand that put America first, but not alone.
It's an odd thing to be reminded of, but remember that we took a decision in this country to treat Donald Trump like the second coming when he arrived at Windsor and achieved or received pomp and circumstance the like of which has never been seen before and will likely never be seen again. So there's a precedent, I suppose, for breaking precedent and treating this particular politician in ways that no other politician in the past would have enjoyed. It's a touch of sunk cost fallacy when we cross so early, not expecting this roster, this roll call of recognition, but we still don't know when it's going to start. So,
people have in for a penny. Shouting death to America and death to Israel. But today we can say open-heartedly to the Ayatollahs in Iran, they will not have nuclear weapons. Thank you, President Trump, for that.
Does he have a translation in his ear? Or he does. He'll have an earpiece in there. President Trump, of course, has an earpiece in his ear through which he will be receiving the full translation, just as indeed you are.
Your Excellence, today we are celebrating the end of the Feast of the Tabernacles, and we will celebrate Simchat Torah tomorrow. 2 years ago, it was the hardest day that Israel, since the dawn of its existence, has ever suffered, and the Jewish people since the Holocaust. Many times I came to the place of the slaughter and the massacre with foreigners from abroad, and we watched what had happened, all the atrocities. And just a few days after that, I accompanied Jared and Ivanka to those harsh areas, horrific areas. And we witnessed what had happened, Kfar Aza and Re'im, and what we saw, something that we had hoped that would never, ever be reiterated since the dawn of humankind. We're talking about massacres, rapes and murders. The devil not only murdered, raped, burned, and murdered many of our brothers and sisters, but they also took them hostages, alive and dead. Since that, the people of Israel have been fighting the longest but justified war ever since its existence. for the release, because that scar has been bleeding, that wound has been bleeding, and everyone has been suffering and crying with them. They were hanging between such despair and hope for two whole years. Today, where everyone, all these honorable guests are sitting, above us were all the pictures were hanging of the hostages. This morning, we were able to take down the pictures because they have been released and returned. It was spontaneous. And I received this pin. I received it from Eitan Moore, one of these hostages. But I am honored to remove it because Eitan Moore is already in the hands of his parents. They are embracing him. Thank you, President Trump. I can take the pin off now.
Donald Trump getting to his feet once more. Although I'm reluctant to conclude that that means he's about to start speaking. Powerful words there,
Mr. President, Speaker. You stand before the people of Israel not as another American president, but as a giant of Jewish history. One for whom we must look back 2.5 millennia into the mists of time to find a parallel, Cyrus the Great. You, President Donald J. Trump, are a colossus who will be enshrined in the pantheon of history. Thousands of years from now, Mr. President, the Jewish people will remember you. We are a nation that remembers. Far from being a local struggle, what we are witnessing is a global struggle, a global battle between the forces of extremism, radicalism, and fundamentalism, and those of freedom, liberty, and democracy. What the world needs now is not appeasers who feed the crocodile in the hope that they will be eaten last, like the kind we have seen recently at the UN General Assembly. And by the way, President Trump, your team has checked the teleprompter. It is working beautifully. What the world needs now are more leaders who are brave, resolute, strong, and bold. The world needs more Trumps.
Okay, I think we can call it now. This is making the Windsor Castle visit look like small beer. I mean, elements of this are frankly unbelievable.
I would like to take this moment to address Prime Minister Netanyahu.
One lens through which we might better understand what's happening here is the room is packed with Benjamin Netanyahu's supporters.
Rosh HaMemshala, toda, Rosh HaMemshala, amadeta bechol shnot keunatcha. אבל בפרט בשנתיים האחרונות מול לחצים אדירים. סטיב ויטקוף, שליחו המיוחד של הנשיא טראמפ, שלחם יחד איתך בשוחות על החזרת החטופים, אמר עליך.
Netanyahu essentially.
העבודה הקשה באמת.
And backed up by almost everybody in the room, trying to recast what has been forced upon him as a glorious victory. That is, I suppose,
there were times
the nature of
with you, Mr. Witkoff, that I thought we need to be more flexible or tougher.
The nature of the moment is that Netanyahu point blank refused to countenance any of the things that he has subsequently agreed to repeatedly last September and then this January again and again and again. But this I don't know who this is, whose benefit this is for, apart from Donald Trump's and possibly the Israeli electorate at some unspecified point in the not too distant future when he has to go to the country again.
Our president, also you, Mr. President, Donald Trump, believes in you as well, that you had to make very, very hard decisions. People who were less courageous would not have been able to make those decisions. Here we are today because Hamas had no alternative. That is what Mr. Witkoff said. They had to. They were constrained to reach that decision. They saw what an army we had, and how we advanced so significantly. differently, and that is what enabled this. That is what the Ambassador Witkoff said yesterday. Mr. Prime Minister,
this is the version Trump of events that Benjamin Netanyahu is absolutely
at the right time.
Desperate to have
to say from
cast
here
in stone.
In the eyes of the
it is far from
thanks
unchallengeable.
To you, we reached these achievements.
But the idea that the pressure brought to bear on Hamas or on the Arab countries that have previously been sympathetic to or supportive of Hamas was the key change here is not borne out by the established and recorded facts. The last ceasefire, and of course many hostages have been released previously, more than the 20 that have happily been released today, were a consequence of negotiation, and those ceasefires were broken.
On this day,
but the version of events that Netanyahu
like to
needs to get front and centre is what we are now witnessing.
And our souls of our nation to the brave IDF soldiers.
I don't know that I've ever witnessed anything like this. Actually, in a democracy. I'm still oscillated wildly from thinking we moved far too early because we ended up taking something that sounded like a sort of cheerleading roster to actually now.
We would like to thank the brave IDF soldiers
who
soared ahead as lions and sacrificed and endangered their lives for the sake of Israel. Some of them had to sacrifice their lives, and we would like to bow their heads and the bereaved families. Their blood was never shed in vain because by their sacrifice, they brought us to this elevated moment, and their names will remain engraved in the hearts of our people, our nation.
President Trump, you are the president of peace. There was not a single person on this planet who did more than you to advance peace. No one even came close. Your election to the presidency marked a turning point, not only for the United States, but for the entire world. Through your strength of character and unwavering resolve, you brought an end to bloody conflicts in no fewer than 8 regions across the globe. In less than 9 months, you became one of the most consequential presidents.
Claim about ending wars has been comprehensively debunked. But here we are, watching history being rewritten in real time.
Without your leadership, and as our sages teach, whoever saves one life, it is as though he has saved an entire world. You have proven that true peace is achieved through strength, and that only those who are prepared to use force in the present can prevent the need to use it in the future. Mr. President,
that's a worrying precedent,
you
to say
more
the least.
Than any other individual are deserving of the highest recognition for your efforts in promoting peace. Therefore, I hereby announce that together with our good friend, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, we will rally speakers and presidents of parliaments from around the world to submit your candidacy for the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, next year. There is no one more deserving than you, President Trump. No one. אדוני הנשיא, אנחנו ניצבים בפני ההיסטוריה ברגע נשגב שיחקק לדורות.
We are standing at a historic moment that will be written in the annals of history. This is such a moving moment.
It's a reminder of the words of Alfred Nobel as he founded that Peace Prize. It should go, and I quote, to the person who shall have done the most or the best work for fraternity between nations, for the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses. So extraordinary to hear in the same breath a claim that using violence, in this case, unprecedented and hideous violence, was justified, and also that this somehow constitutes grounds for giving the Nobel Prize for Peace, whose criteria include the abolition or reduction of standing armies and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses.
President Trump, let us pray that God Almighty will wish you, your country, your family, and all your citizens, and may there be peace on you and all of us.
May God bless the United States of America, and may God bless the state of Israel. Toda rabah v'chag sameach.
Thank you very much, and we wish you a very chag sameach, a good feast of the tabernacles, the Jewish festival that takes place today and tomorrow.
23 minutes after 11, and I've given up predicting that the president is about to speak. We'll just have to wait and see. Although
it is an honor and a privilege for me to invite the Prime Minister and member of Knesset, Benjamin Netanyahu, to address us.
Okay. Well, I certainly wasn't exaggerating when I told you that we hadn't been provided with any form of schedule or script for these proceedings. We were expecting Donald Trump to address the Knesset at 9 o'clock this morning, UK time. It's now 24 minutes after 11, and he is yet to address
the Knesset.
And now we have Benjamin Netanyahu.
His Excellent, the President of Israel, Mr. Herzog, and his wife, Michal, and all distinguished guests, headed by our great friend, the President of the United States, President Donald J. Trump.
25 minutes after 11, I still think it would feel odd to withdraw from proceedings, despite the fact that we've been very much taken by surprise. I would, however, remind you that judges at the International Criminal Court have issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and his former defense minister, something that's unlikely to pop up in any of the speeches that we are listening to at the moment.
That will definitely be engraved in the annals of our history. And you, Mr. President, will also, your name will be engraved in our history. You have already been.
The judges, of course, said that there were reasonable grounds that these men bore criminal responsibility for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity during the war between Israel and Hamas. The Hamas leader also included in those warrants, although he was killed in an airstrike in Gaza in July of 2024.
The harbinger of good tidings came just an hour ago that all those live hostages have been returned to us. What excitement! We have been waiting for this moment, and we are committed to bringing them all home. And I would like to personally thank you, and on behalf of all our entire nation, you, thank you, President Trump. Thank you.
Now, I know that the teleprompters are working well, though I'm not using them. But I'm not sure about the translation. So I'll say,
in case you don't know, that's a very weak joke about some lies Donald Trump told about the teleprompter being deliberately sabotaged when he was addressing the United Nations. He also claimed that they'd somehow doctored the escalators as well, but never let it be suggested that he suffers from a victimhood syndrome.
And move the embassy here. Thank you, President Trump, for that. There are many other reasons to thank you since your last visit here. thank you for recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Thank you for standing up to the lies against Israel and the United Nations. Thank you for recognizing in your 2020 peace plan our rights in Judea and Samaria, the ancestral homeland of the Jewish people. Thank you for brokering the historic Abraham Accords. Abraham. Eskemei Avraham.
It was about a week before that Donald Trump speech that Benjamin Netanyahu was describing how Israel was going to be Sparta.
Nuclear deal.
Absolutely crystal clear they intended to go on for the foreseeable future. This is, hard to respond in real time, but this is so completely at odds with so many of the established facts.
Decision to launch Operation Midnight Hammer. Boy, is that... You got to hear this.
But I understand why many of you are telling me that you can't quite believe your ears.
This is the most fitting name ever named for a military operation, because a little after midnight, you really hammered them. My friends, this is only a partial list, but it's enough to affirm what I've said time and again. Donald Trump is the greatest friend that the state of Israel has ever had in the White House. No American president has ever done more for Israel. And as I said in Washington, it ain't even close. It's really not a match. Mr. President, today we welcome you here to thank you for your pivotal leadership in putting forward a proposal that got the backing of almost the entire world. A proposal that brings all our hostages home. A proposal that ends the war by achieving all our objectives. A proposal that opens the door to an historic expansion of peace in our region and beyond our region. Mr. President, you are committed to this peace. I am committed to this peace. And together, Mr. President, we will achieve this peace.
If this ends while I'm still on air, I would be absolutely fascinated to hear your responses to what we are and are witnessing and have.
Mr. President,
you know the number.
Today, the Jewish calendar marks the end of 2 years of war. That war began on October 7th on the Jewish festival of Simchat Torah. You always tell me, and you tell the world, remember October 7th. Mr. President, we remember. We remember the thousands of Hamas terrorists who stormed into our towns and kibbutzim. We remember the 1,200 people Hamas savagely slaughtered in cold blood, including dozens and dozens of Americans. We remember entire families burnt alive as they embraced each other. We remember the beautiful young Israelis brutally gunned down at the Nova Music Festival. We remember the hundreds of our citizens who were dragged into the dungeons of Gaza, including 12 Americans, men and women, young and old, babies, and elderly Holocaust survivors. My friends, Mr. President, Donald, these monsters take babies as hostages. In response to this barbaric attack on October 7th, Israel did what it had to do. With indomitable courage, we set out to defend our people, to defeat our enemies, and to release our hostages. Our heroic soldiers fought like lions. They fought on the front lines of civilization and barbarism. Israel achieved amazing victories over Hamas and the entire Iran terror axis. Sinwar, Deif, Haniyeh, Nasrallah, Assad, they're all gone. Iran's nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program, with your enormous help, Mr. President, rolled back. Half the Houthi leadership wiped out. But the price of this victory, the price of these victories, has been heavy. Nearly 2,000 of Israel's finest were lost, nearly half in battle. They left behind parents, spouses, siblings, and children. Their love and laughter, their promise and potential were lost forever. To the families of our fallen fighters, many of them are here, I say, I know the depth of your pain. I know the inconsolable grief that will accompany you for the rest of your lives. The state of Israel bows its head in eternal gratitude to our fallen heroes. Because of these heroes, our nation will survive. Because of these heroes, our nations will thrive. And because of these heroes, our nation will have peace. Mr. President, thousands of our brave soldiers were also wounded, suffering terrible blows to body and soul. Brave soldiers like Ari Spitz. Ari is an American. Ari is an American Israeli who was injured. Israeli who was injured in Gaza while searching for Hamas terrorists and weapons. Two of Ari's comrades were killed in this action and 10 were injured. Ari was presumed dead but made a miraculous recovery despite losing 3 limbs. Ari, stand up for a minute alone. Stand up. There you go. There. Ari. Ari, you are the spirit of Joshua. You are the spirit of David. You are the spirit of the Maccabees. You are the spirit of Israel. I salute you. We all salute you. Sabine Tassa of Kibbutz Netiv Asara is watching us today from the Israeli consulate in Los Angeles. Sabine lost her husband and her oldest son on October 7th. She is the mother of 3 other boys. 2 of them, Koren and Shai, witnessed their father jump on a Hamas grenade to save his 2 sons. We all saw the film of those two boys crying out in pain. Father is dead. Why? Why did God save me? Mr. President, my friend Donald, I've seen some very tough things in my life. But I couldn't bring myself to watch those boys suffering again. So I didn't see this film except once. Yet Sabine, their mother, has had the strength and fortitude to show this film across the world. And my wife Sarah and I asked her, Sabine, how do you do it? Why do you do it? And she answered, I do it to show the entire world the monsters Israel is fighting and the justice of our cause. This is what she's doing once again in Los Angeles. Sabine, you can hear me now. So I want to tell you on behalf of all of us, you embody the spirit of our biblical heroines, Deborah, Ruth, and Esther. You too are the spirit of Israel, and we all salute you. Mr. President, you asked me on our many conversations during the 12-day war with Iran, you asked me, how are the people holding up? And I said to you, our people are strong. Israelis are a nation of lions with unlimited resolve to defend our country and secure our future. The people give strength to our soldiers, and the people give strength to me and to my colleagues. The Jewish people have risen from the ashes time and again. But when we formed the State of Israel and the Army of Israel, we pledged never again, never again would be defenseless against our enemies. And that resolute strength not only assures our survival, it assures our future, it assures peace. We have paid a high price for this war. But our enemies now understand just how powerful and just how determined Israel is. They understand that attacking Israel on October 7th was a catastrophic mistake. They understand that Israel is strong and that Israel is here to stay. And this, Mr. President, is the indispensable foundation of peace. Peace through strength. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a momentous day, a day of great joy, as the remaining hostages come home. My wife Sarah and I have met with the hostage families many times. There were no words to describe their agony, only tears of bottomless sorrow and unimaginable pain. At the beginning of the war, I promised to bring all the hostages home. Today, with the indispensable help, the determined and focused help, the unremitting help of President Trump and his team, and with the incredible sacrifice and courage of the soldiers of Israel, we are fulfilling that promise. It has been a long journey to get here. In the first week of the war, our brave soldiers put military pressure on Hamas, and the international community put diplomatic pressure on them. This enabled us to secure the release of over 100 hostages. In heroic rescue attempts behind enemy lines, Israel's special forces rescued 8 live hostages and brought back the remains of a dozens more. But as time went on, we all know what happened. The diplomatic pressure was turned on its head. More and more governments bought into Hamas's false propaganda. More and more governments succumbed to anti-Semitic mobs in their own countries. They just turned on Israel. They called for us to surrender to Hamas demands, just leave Gaza immediately, they said, end the war without committing to disarm Hamas, without committing to demilitarize Gaza. Had Israel succumbed to those demands, not only would Sinwar, Nasrallah, Assad, and Iran's missile and nuclear program remain intact, not only that, because in no time, the Hamas killers would be back on the border fence, ready to repeat the horrors of October 7th again and again, as they vowed to do. But just at that point of maximum pressure on Israel, a man named Donald J. Trump was elected President of the United States. And ladies and gentlemen, overnight, everything changed. Everything. Mr. President, thanks to your unequivocal backing of Israel, we secured a second hostage deal within weeks of your election. And in the months that followed, we worked closely together to forge a path to bring the remaining hostages home and end the war. End the war in a way that ensures the disarming of Hamas, the demilitarization of Gaza, and that Gaza would never again pose a threat to Israel. 2 months ago, you fully backed my decision to send the IDF into the last Hamas stronghold in Gaza City. You shared my view that this military pressure would help free the hostages. And despite all the criticism, all the naysayers, we were right. Hamas caved in. And 2 weeks ago, you succeeded in doing something miraculous. You succeeded in doing something that no one believed was possible. You brought most of the Arab world. You brought most of the world behind your proposal to free the hostages and end the war. I want to thank Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, and Ron Dermer for their great contribution to this effort. And I want to thank our negotiating team. I believe that the close cooperation between the two of us, between our two nations, combining Israel's military pressure and President Trump's unmatched global leadership. I have to tell you, I've seen a lot of American presidents. I've seen them all in the time that I've been here, and I've been here quite a lot of time. I've never seen anyone move the world so quickly, so decisively, so resolutely as our friend President Donald J. Trump. With our military pressure and President Trump's global leadership, we achieved this historic moment. It's a moment of indescribable joy as our nation embraces our sons who are coming home. Mr. President, this week, Jews around the world are going to read the book of Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, in the Bible. The Bible has many miraculous moments. One of them was your decision to bomb Fordo. I think it was a pivot of history because it wasn't meant only to bomb Fordo. That action and your previous action of taking out Qasem Soleimani, the architect of death. I think that changed the balance of power in the world. You brought America back again to the driver's seat.
If you don't think we should be listening to this, you are quite profoundly and horribly wrong.
I said that we're going it's to extraordinary. Read this week the book of Ecclesiastes. It's not a book of action. It's a book of meditations, of thought, a perspective on life and on death. And in this book, we read the immortal words of King Solomon. To everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Et milchama ve'et shalom. A time for peace and a time for war. The last 2 years have been a time of war. The coming years will hopefully be a time for peace. Peace inside Israel and peace outside Israel. I look forward to continuing marching with you on the path we paved together with the Abraham Accords. Under your leadership, we can forge new peace treaties with Arab countries in the region and Muslim countries beyond the region. Abraham's children will work together to build a better future, a future that will unite civilization against barbarism, light against darkness, and hope against despair. And my friends, I believe that with President Trump's leadership, this will happen a lot faster than people think. As Prime Minister of Israel, I extend my hand to hold those who seek peace with us. No one wants peace more than the people of Israel. Israel will always remain vigilant in defending itself. And Israel will always remain full of hope. Hope is our national anthem. Hope is our creed. Hope is our strength. It is time, my friends, to realize that hope and expand the circle of peace. Mr. President, thank you for all you have done for us. I have submitted your nomination to be the first non-Israeli recipient of the Israel Prize, Israel's highest award. As to that other prize, just a question of time, you'll get it. But I want you to get the Israel Prize, our highest award, to our greatest friend. When others were weak, you were strong. When others were fearful, you were bold. When others abandoned us, you stood by our side. On behalf of the government and people of Israel, I thank you for your extraordinary friendship. Thank you for helping bring our hostages home. Thank you for supporting Israel's march to victory. Thank you for paving a path to peace. Mechubadi Nesi Arzot Habrit, ידידי דונלד,
ברוך הבא לישראל, ברוך הבא לירושלים, ברוך הבא ביום המרגש הזה,
שהחיינו וקיימנו והגיענו לזמן הזה.
And blessed be those who have reached this moment, this momentous moment. It's a prayer from the Bible.
May God bless you
and your family, Mr. President. May God bless America. May God bless Israel. And may God bless the covenant between our two promised lands. Thank you, Mr. President.
The time is 11:53. I think we can say with some confidence that Donald Trump will be delivering his address shortly. I hope you'll allow me to say this. I'm quite good at processing live events on the programme and sometimes even translating them for you, not linguistically, but in terms of significance. And I'm not going to be able to do that yet. I'm going to start inviting your calls when Donald Trump has finished his speech, presuming it doesn't last over an hour and 7 minutes, but frankly, I wouldn't put money on that at the moment. But that speech from Netanyahu was absolutely crucial, even if you found it disturbing. This is the context in which the future of the Middle East is going to be decided. This is the context that Benjamin Netanyahu has sought to create. Simultaneous rejection of international courts and international opinion while embracing...
Come on up, opposition.
Well, let's see. Here
Come
he
on,
is.
Opposition.
Yeah, okay. אני מתכבד להזמין כעת את ראש האופוזיציה, חבר הכנסת יאיר לפיד.
So the leader of the Israeli opposition now,
יאיר לפיד,
saying hello to President Trump. I will just open the phone lines when this is over, and you can tell me what you think you have just heard. The number will be the same. No, he's sitting down again.
Mr. Speaker, members of Knesset, ministers, President Herzog, Prime Minister Netanyahu, distinguished guests, Your Excellency, President Trump. For 2 years, we waited for this moment.
This is Leah Yapid, the leader of the Israeli opposition. So I'm afraid that I was wrong again when I suggested that Donald Trump would be about to speak. This is, look, partly this is the nature of live events, and it's also a reminder of how unprecedented this is. I'd remind you that one of the first things the Speaker did, what feels like several days ago now, was insist that anybody expressing dissent in that room would be summarily removed, but that applause was allowed.
Whoever destroys one life, it is as though he destroyed an entire world, and whoever saves one life, it is though as he has saved an entire world. Mr. President, you have saved the lives of our hostages. But you saved so much more. You have saved the souls of the bereaved whose loved ones now will be brought home for burial. You have saved thousands of soldiers who will now not fall in battle. And you have saved millions from the horrors of war. You have saved more than one life, and each life is an entire world. This is a historic moment and a reminder that history is shaped by people. It is shaped by those who know the past but have the vision to change the future. When you were elected, you declared that you would be the president of peace. You have kept your word. The fact that you are not awarded the Nobel Peace Prize is a grave mistake by the committee. But they will have no choice, Mr. President. They will have to award it to you next year. Peace will not come by waiting. It will come by building, by reaching out, and by daring once again to believe. You, Mr. President, have done the unimaginable. We will be eternally grateful. But we also need to take responsibility. The destiny of Israel will always be written by the people of Israel. We must now prove ourselves worthy of what has been achieved. From its founding, Israel has said to the world that our strength, our power, rests upon our values. Israel is the strongest country. country in the Middle East because we are the only democracy in the Middle East. Because we believe in the principles laid in our Declaration of Independence, which says Israel will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex. It will guarantee freedom of religion, conscience, language, education, and culture. It will safeguard the holy places for all religions. Those are our values. That is who we are, as people, as a country.
Very muted applause for those
our neighbors
statements regarding equality.
Must understand one more thing about us. We are not going anywhere. The Middle East is our home. We are here to stay. Our story did not end in the Bible. It began there. It continues in our laboratories and universities, in our innovation hubs. Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, and the Houthis, they all read the wrong intelligence reports. The real intelligence report on Israel's intentions is found in the book of Genesis. And I will give you and your descendants after you the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession. We call upon the nations of the Islamic world to honor our neighbors, Saudi Arabia, Syria, others. We are here to stay. We can do great things together. Come and talk to us. Mr. President, you are the one who can make it happen as you did with the historic Abraham Accords. Then too, no one believed it was possible. Then too, you imposed your vision on everyone. While others spoke of difficulties, you created opportunity. You can be the one to bring the next wave of peace. The people of Israel support this. They want this. We are ready. And you can later today in Egypt with your unbelievably talented team, my friends, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, forge a regional alliance that will change not only the Middle East, but the entire world. After 2 years of war, the peoples of this region should look around and ask themselves, whose situation is better? Those who chose the path of peace or those who chose the path of war? Those who invested in their people, in the education of their children, in science and education and technology, or those who invested in hate and in violence. From here, I say to all those who demonstrated against Israel these past 2 years, on the streets of London and Rome, in Paris and in Columbia University, I do not represent the government, as you know. I am the leader of the opposition. And I tell you, then, you were deceived. You were deceived. Propaganda experts, funded by terror money, manipulated you. Now that the war has stopped, you have time and a chance to go and learn the facts. The truth is, there was no genocide. No intentional starvation. The truth is, there was an army and a country fighting in the most complicated conditions imaginable against terrorists who send their own children to die for a follow-up, who use their own children as human shields. The truth is that a democratic state was attacked by a fanatical terrorist organization. 1,200 people were killed in one day. Women were raped. Babies were burned alive. And all that, on all the why, they played with your minds, selling you the absurd idea that supporting Islamic terror is somehow a liberal value. There is good and evil in this world. When you stand with Hamas, you stand with evil. When you stand with Hezbollah, you stand with evil. When you stand with the Iranian regime, you stand with evil. When you stand with Israel, you stand on the side of justice.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he won't be listing any of the institutions, individuals, organisations or countries who have expressed support for Hamas. But I will remind you of what the United Nations Commission found after investigating events in Gaza for 2 years. Four of the five genocidal acts defined by the 1948 Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, namely killing, causing serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about the destruction of the Palestinians in whole or in part, and imposing measures intended to prevent birth. If there is any confusion or dispute about whether or not those things actually happen, then the best way to find out would, of course, to have objective international journalists on the ground in Gaza. And I'm sure I don't need to remind you why that hasn't happened.
Carmela was 8 years old. The bodies, grandmother and granddaughter, were found embraced. They were murdered together. On stage at the ceremony, Galit said a sentence that moved us all. "We don't want revenge," she said. "We want redemption. Today, the redemption begins. Israel has endured two terrible years on the battlefield and in the international arena. But in those 2 years, we also rediscovered our own greatness. We remember how good we can be. Our pilots who took control of the skies over Iran, our industries leading the world in technology, our civil society, which reached out to help every victim of the war. We will move forward toward
this. This is what the opposition sounds like. I can't help wondering what an ally would have to say.
Who saved us all will fold away their uniforms and rise as teachers and engineers, scientists and innovators, investors and small business owners. We will never be able to repay the debt to those who sacrificed everything these past years. To those who, as President Lincoln said, gave the last full measure of devotion. We can only be worthy of them, worthy of their sacrifice. Mr. President, allow me to speak also to the businessman in you, the deal maker who understands value. If there were one stock in the world I would invest in today, it is the State of Israel. If there were one nation that deserves unrestricted access to GPU chips, to AI and SMR technologies, to American markets, it is the State of Israel. Israel's future is intertwined with our eternal alliance, our strategic and moral covenant with our greatest friends, the United States of America. This war is over. We will always need to stay vigilant, to guard against those who seek our destruction. But the State of Israel is about to reinvent itself. The challenges ahead demand not only strength, but a new vision. It's time to take a new path. To be a nation that is advanced and thriving and peace-seeking. We have waited for this moment, for the end of the war, for the return of the hostages, for the chance to rechannel our grief and loss into the energy needed to rebuild our nation. Thanks to you, Mr. President. Thanks to our soldiers, our lions. Thanks to the millions of great Israeli patriots who filled the streets and the square and never, not for one moment, gave up on the hostages. Thanks to all of them, the strength within us can now rise, succeed, and build for our future and for our children. Thank you very much. God bless the United States of America. Am Israel Chai.
There is a slim possibility that the President of the United States, Donald Trump, is about to address the Knesset. The time now is 7 minutes after 12. So just on the genocide question, because it's still very live and he addressed it directly, you have the United Nations Commission and you also have the world's leading association of genocide scholars declaring that Israel has committed genocide in Gaza. And on it is now my the other side, you have the people that won't let journalists into Gaza, saying that it hasn't.
Of the United States of America, His Hallelujah. Excellency Here he is. Donald J. Trump, to address the Knesset.
Thank you very much, everybody. It's a great honor. Nice place. Very nice place. Mr. President, Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, esteemed members of the Knesset and cherished citizens of Israel, we gather on a day of profound joy, of soaring hope, of renewed faith, and above all, a day to give our deepest thanks to the Almighty God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. After two harrowing years in darkness and captivity, 20 courageous hostages are returning to the glorious embrace of their families, and it is glorious. 28 more precious loved ones are coming home at last to rest in this sacred soil for all of time. And after so many years of unceasing war and endless danger, today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity. This is not only the end of a war, this is the end of an age of terror and death, and the beginning of the age of faith and hope and of God. It's the start of a grand concord and lasting harmony for Israel and all the nations of what will soon be a truly magnificent region. I believe that so strongly. This is the historic dawn of a new Middle East. I want to express my gratitude to a man of exceptional courage and patriotism, whose partnership did so much to make this momentous day possible. You know who I'm talking about. There's only one, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Bibi, please stand up. And he is not easy, I want to tell you. He's not the easiest guy to deal with. But that's what makes him great. That's what makes him great. Thank you very much, baby. Great job. And let me also convey my tremendous appreciation for all of the nations of the Arab and Muslim world that came together to press Hamas to set the hostages free and to send them home. We had a lot of help. We had a lot of help from a lot of people that you wouldn't suspect. And I want to thank them very much for that. It's an incredible triumph for Israel and the world to have all of these nations working together as partners in peace. And it's pretty unusual for you to see that, but it happened in this case. This was a very unusual point in time. a brilliant point in time. Generations from now, this will be remembered as the moment that everything began to change and change very much for the better. Like the USA right now, it will be the golden age of Israel and the golden age of the Middle East. It's going to work together. I'd like to thank several great American patriots for their invaluable help in getting something done that almost everyone thought was absolutely impossible. We were wasting our time. So many people said, you're just wasting your time. But we weren't, because we had talented people working with us, and we had people that love your country and, frankly, people that love the region. They love the Middle East. I want to thank my friend Steve Witkoff. You know, Steve was chosen by me. He never did this before, but I knew him as a few things. He was a great businessman, but I know a lot of great businessmen, to be honest with you. He had tremendous negotiating skills, but I know a lot of people that negotiate pretty well, although it is an art. But there are people that can negotiate pretty well. But most importantly with Steve, he's just a great guy. Everybody loved him. Everybody. I mean, I know some negotiators that are so good, but you wouldn't have had peace in the Middle East. You'd be, would be in World War III right now with some of these guys. Everybody loves Steve, and they respect him, and they somehow can relate to him. I've known him for many years, and I've seen it over and over again.
Some sort of disturbance in the Knesset, as you will gather. Someone is being dragged out of the chamber as the president stays at the podium. It's something in the person's hands, whether it's some sort of placard or flag. The situation has been, and now a second person has been removed from the chamber as well, as far as I can see.
Thank you.
Please. I'll find out a little more on that as soon as I have the information. You will.
That was very efficient. So back to Steve. He's... But I tell one story because he was so involved, and then we called in Jared. We called in, we need that brain on occasion. We got to get Jared in here. We got to get a certain group of people. But Steve started this all by himself. I call him Henry Kissinger. Who doesn't leak? Okay? Henry is a big leaker. He leaked. Steve doesn't leak. Steve just wants to get the job done. He wants to do what's right. But I'll give you just a quick story, because as you know, he's working on the war with Russia and Ukraine, a war that would have never happened if I were president. A shame. 7,000 young soldiers a week are being killed. More than that this last week. It's a shame that it never happened. But it did happen, and we won the race, and I took over this horrible war that's been raging, and I thought it would be easily settled. I thought it was a hell of a lot easier than doing what we just did very successfully with Israel and a lot of other people. But this came first, and we'll get that one. But I set up a meeting for him to meet with President Putin, thinking it would be a 15 or a 20-minute meeting. Steve had no idea about Russia, had no idea about Putin too much, didn't know too much about politics, wasn't that interested. He was really good at real estate, but he had that quality that I was looking for, and I didn't see it around in too many ways. And I set up the meeting with Putin and I called. I said, is Steve finished yet? That was about a half an hour into the meeting. No, sir, he's not. He's still inside. This is in Moscow. I said, well, how's he doing? I don't know, sir. He's still inside. I called up an hour later. Let me speak to Steve. Sir, he's still with Putin. He's with President Putin. I said, wow, that's a long meeting. 1 hour. I called up an hour later. He's still with Putin. 3 hours later, he was still with Putin. 4 hours later, he started to get the word that he was going to be coming out soon. And in 5 hours, he came out. I said, what the hell were you talking about for 5 hours? And he says, just a lot of interesting things. We're talking about a lot of interesting things, including what he went in there for. But you can't talk about it for five. You can talk about it for a certain period of time and you know what you're getting. But that's a talent. That's a talent where you can do that. Most people I'd send in, number one, they wouldn't be accepted. Number two, if they were, the meeting would last 5 minutes. And that's what happens with Steve. Everybody loves him. They love him on this side. They love him on the other side. And he really is. He's a great negotiator because he's a great guy. So thank you very much, Steve. Very much.
I think I've lost the faculty of analysis. So sorry about that. I will be inviting you to exercise yours if this speech ever ends.
Let me also give a very special thanks to someone who truly loves Israel. In fact, loves it so much that my daughter converted. My daughter converted. I didn't know this was going to happen. And Ivanka's here. And, Bibi, you do know this was not in the cards for me. You understand that. And she is so happy, and they are so happy. At least I think they're happy. If they're not, we have a big story, right? No, they have a great marriage, and they get along great. They're best friends. They have a very special relationship. But Jared has been so helpful. He really did something very special. He established the Abraham Accords with a group of very wonderful people. I like calling it the Avraham Accords because people that... What? Avraham. It's so cool. It's so much sort of nicer. You know, the Abraham versus the Avraham. I just don't want to sound too sanctimonious when I do it. So, you know, I sort of split it up. This way we keep everybody happy. But we have some very great talent, and they have no excuses for anything that's taken place because we had some unbelievably good people working on this. And then you're going to add a man named Marco Rubio, who is also here. And I have a prediction that Marco will go down, I mean this, as the greatest Secretary of State in the history of the United States. I believe that. I believe it. And he and I, you know, we really fought it out. You remember, he was tough. He was nasty. Who the hell thought this was going to happen, Marco, right? And now I'm saying he's going to go down as the greatest. He will. He was always smart and sharp, and people respect him. And then we have somebody who's young, but an unbelievable leader. I saw it a long time ago, and he's turned out to be even better than we thought. Right, Susie? I think even better. And that's Pete Hegseth, who is our Secretary of War, formerly Secretary of Defense. And as you know, we decisively won World War I. We decisively won World War II, decisively. And everything in between and everything before it, we won everything. And then they had the brilliant idea of changing the name from war, you know, it was war, to defense. And with that went a certain thinking. And we fought in a very politically correct way after that. We always had the strongest military, and now we have a stronger military than we've ever had before. Because of my first term, I've totally rebuilt the military, every aspect of it. But we have, if you think, we settled 8 wars in 8 months. I'm now including this one, by the way, if that's okay. They may say, well, that was quick. Because yesterday I was saying 7, but now I can say 8. The hostages are back. The hostages are back.
I think if we hadn't taken this live in its entirety, and I'd tried to explain to you tomorrow what happened, I don't think you'd have believed me. Hold that thought.
It is a good feeling. Isn't that nice to say? You know, I just said the hostage, first time I said the hostages are back. It sounds, it feels so good to say it.
But when you settle 8
wars in 8 months, that means you don't like
celebrating
war.
The
Everyone thought
the
I was going to be brutal. In fact, I remember Hillary Clinton during a debate, she said, look at him, look at him. He's going to go to war with everybody. And actually, she said, he's got a personality that's all about war. No, and my personality actually is all about stopping wars. And it seems to work. Seems to work. But it also means this name change and our attitude that we're not going to go into a war. But if we do, we're going to win that war like nobody has ever won a war before. We will not be politically correct. But we're not going to be there. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, Bibi, before, peace through strength. And that's what it's all about. The United States has the greatest and most powerful military in the right now history of the world. I can tell you we have weapons that nobody's ever dreamt of. I only hope we never have to use them. I rebuilt the military. I was proud to do it. But some of the things I hated to do, I hated certain of the weapons because the level of power is so enormous, it's so dangerous, so bad. But we have to do what we have to do. We make the best weapons in the world, and we've got a lot of them. And we've given a lot to Israel, frankly. And
a moment to remember, perhaps, that in northern Gaza at the moment, people are digging through the rubble in search of their loved ones' remains.
I mean, Bibi would call me so many times, can you get me this weapon, that weapon, that weapon? Some of them I never heard of, Bibi, and I made them. But we'd get them here, wouldn't we? And they are the best. They are the best. And you used them well. It also takes people that know how to use them. And you obviously used them very well. But so many that Israel became strong and powerful, which ultimately led to peace. That's what led to peace. So as we celebrate today, let us remember how this nightmare of depravity and death all began. 2 years ago, on the eve of the Simchat Torah holiday, thousands of innocent Israeli civilians were attacked by terrorists, and one of the most evil and heinous desecrations of innocent life the world has ever seen, the worst slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust. The cruelty of October 7th struck to the core of humanity itself. Nobody could believe what they were witnessing. The United States of America grieved alongside you, and we mourned for our own citizens who were so viciously taken that day. And to all the families whose lives were forever changed by the atrocities of that day, and all of the people of Israel, please know that America joins you in those two everlasting vows: never forget and never again. From October 7th until this week, Israel has been a nation at war, enduring burdens that only a proud and faithful people could withstand. It was a very tough period of time. For so many families across this land, it has been years since you've known a single day of true peace. But now at last, not only for Israelis, but also for Palestinians and for many others, the long and painful nightmare is finally over. And as the dust settles, the smoke fades, the debris is removed, and the ashes clean from the air, the day that breaks on a region transformed and a beautiful and much brighter future appears suddenly within your reach. This is now a very exciting time for Israel and for the entire Middle East, because all across the Middle East, the forces of chaos, terror, and ruin that have plagued the region for decades now stand weakened, isolated, and totally defeated. A new coalition of proud and responsible nations is emerging, and because of us, the enemies of all civilization are in retreat. Thanks to the bravery and incredible skill of the Israeli Defense Forces and Operation Rising Lion, guys, central casting. Let's put him in a movie. Look at him. Great job. And my people loved working with you. Loved it. They worked so well together. But many of Iran's top terrorists, including nuclear scientists and commanders, have been extinguished from this earth. And with Operation Midnight Hammer, boy, that's a great name for that, what we did last June. The United States military flew seven of those beautiful B-2 bombers. They look so beautiful all of a sudden. They were always, I thought they were pretty planes. I had no idea they could do what they did. In fact, we just ordered 28 more of them. A little updated version. We ordered a whole pile of them. And almost 100 other planes went with them, including fighter jets and we had 52 tankers, big, beautiful, brand-new tankers that were loading them up four or five times. They've traveled 37 hours back and forth. Think of that. But we had tankers all over the sky for all the other planes. We had the F-22s, the F-35s, F-16s. We had a hell of a lot of planes. So we had 52 gas stations in the sky. That's what they call them. I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be flying one of them. We have our great General Raisin Kane right here. General, stand up. This guy. What a general. Thank you. I asked General Kane, I said, you know, we're having problems with ISIS, and I was in Washington, and I asked, how long would it take to defeat ISIS. And my Washington generals told me, 3, 4, maybe 5 years, sir. I said, I don't get it. We got the best equipment in the world. Why? So I flew to Iraq, and I met with a man named Kane. He said, what's your first name? He said, they call me Raisin, sir. I said, wait a minute. Your name is Raisin Kane? I've been looking for you for a long time. You gotta be kidding. So they told me 3, 4, 5 years to defeat ISIS. And I sit down with him and I say, why is it? I flew there in the dark of night. I landed. I'll never forget it. It's quite a trip. I'm glad I made it because I met him. I said, could I ask you, General? I come down. He said, you with another general and a sergeant. Everybody was like central casting. They could go into a movie right now. Between him and you guys over here, we could get rich making movies, okay? But and they got along so great. That's the beautiful thing, that your military and army, BB, got along so great. But
a couple of people asking why we've taken so much of this.
Well, I was told by the television generals in Washington.
Two reasons, really. Number one, it would have been very hard to pull out when we were expecting the president to start speaking at any moment. And number two, you need to listen to this. You need to know what is going on. This is an incredibly important moment. And the context being provided by these speeches is crucial, even as it is.
They said 4 years. Said, well, sir.
Let's just say strange.
Look. It's not my place to say, but you're asking me the question. What you have to do is you hit them from the west, you hit them from the north, you hit them from the south, you hit them above, you hit them below. I said, so why didn't they do it? And he didn't want to speak badly of his superiors, which is hard to believe they were his superiors. It should have been the other way around a long time ago, because he's the one that did Operation Hammer. It was flawless. It was flawless. It was absolutely flawless. And I said, so you really think you can do it in 4 weeks? Yes, sir, 100%. You have to do it differently than they were doing it. They were using one base, and it was hundreds of miles away. And he says, we have all these portable bases all over the Middle East. And they didn't want to use them because they didn't want to offend the country where the portable... They wouldn't have even known what the hell the planes were going up, right? They wouldn't have known, but he said, no, they didn't want to defend anybody, offend anybody.
And nobody knows what he's talking about now, not just you.
You sure about that? I'm going to call you back. I'll call you back on Monday. I'm going back to Washington. But you think 4 weeks? Yes, sir, I think we can do it in 4 weeks. We'll have time left over. So I call him on Monday. I say, you think you can do it? 4 weeks. I said, go ahead and do it. He did it. I'll tell you, he did it in 4 weeks, less than 4 weeks. So, General, stand up, please. Again, this is a real general. This is not a television general. He doesn't want to go on television. He doesn't want to go on television. I said, the other guys love being on television. So we dropped 14 bombs on Iran's key nuclear facilities, totally, as I said originally, obliterating them. And that's been confirmed, and everybody understands it. Together we stopped the number one state sponsor of terror from obtaining the world's most dangerous weapons. And if you think about it, if we didn't do that, and assuming we made the same deal that we have today, there'd be a dark cloud over this deal. And number one, it wouldn't happen because the other Arab and Muslim nations really wouldn't feel comfortable making the deal that we have now, right? If Iran had that nuclear weapon that they were about 2 months away from having. They would have had it in 2 months or maybe less than that. They were right at, this was our last shot. They looked at it for 22 years. This was our last shot. The pilots told me that. They said, 22 years, sir, they looked at it. Our predecessors, look, they studied it 3 times a year, would do drills on that exact attack. And boy, did they get it right. But let's assume they didn't. And let's assume there was large-scale nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran. We couldn't be here today, even if we signed the deal, which we couldn't do because...
Remember, Donald Trump was assured that the teleprompter was working perfectly. So this is all either planned or scripted.
was my honor to help. But it isn't, it true, though, that can you imagine the same, let's assume, Bibi, the same documents, we had everything the same, but you had somebody out there that was, in the opinion of everybody, all-powerful in the Middle East. They took a big hit, didn't they? Didn't they take a big hit? Boy, oh, boy. They got it from one side, from the other. And you know, it would be great if we could make a peace deal with them. And I think that's big. Would you be happy with that? Wouldn't it be nice, I think? Because I think they want to. I think they're tired. Somebody said, sir, they're starting their nuclear program again. I said, let me tell you something. They're not starting anything. They want to survive. The last thing they want to do is start digging holes again in mountains that just got blown up and start... They're not doing... They want to survive, okay? But I think we have a chance. Steve, you, and I think Jared... Come on, I'll call you back for another one. We always bring Jared when we want to get that deal closed. We bring Jared, but Steve, you and Jared and the general and Pete and Marco, you'll get that deal done easy. I think that'll be easy. But first, we have to get Russia done. We got to get that one done. If you don't mind, Steve, let's focus on Russia first, all right? We'll get it done. In Lebanon, the dagger of Hezbollah, long aimed at Israel's throat, has been totally shattered. My administration is actively supporting the new president of Lebanon in his mission to permanently disarm Hezbollah's terror brigades. He's doing very well. And build a thriving state at peace with its neighbors. And you're very much in favor of that, I know. And good things are happening there, really good things. And with this week's ceasefire, we've achieved the most challenging breakthrough of them all. The most challenging breakthrough maybe ever. I mean, I've never seen anything like... I've been involved in a lot of success. I have never seen anything like what's going on today all over the world. People are dancing in the streets, not just in Israel. They're dancing in the streets of countries that would have never danced in the street about what's happening today. They're dancing in those streets. So this long and difficult war
to David
is now
Bowie and Mick Jagger.
Ended. You know,
some
people say 3,000 years, some people say 500 years, whatever it is. It's the granddaddy of them all. And in an unprecedented achievement, virtually the entire region has endorsed the plan that Gaza will be immediately demilitarized, that Hamas will be disarmed, and Israel's security will no longer be threatened in any way, shape, or form. So Israel, with our help, has won all that they can by force of arms. You've won. I mean, you've won. Now it's time to translate these victories against terrorists on the battlefield into the ultimate prize of peace and prosperity for the entire Middle East. It's about time you were able to enjoy the fruits of your labor, Mr. Opposition Leader. He's a very nice opposition leader. I think... No, he's a nice man. Bibi, he's a nice man. He knows what he's doing, right? No, he's a very nice guy. Well, see, now you can be a little
bit nicer, by the amount
Bibi,
of laughter.
You're not at war
but,
anymore, Bibi.
We've had quite a long time to get used to it.
But only by embracing the opportunities of this moment can we achieve our goal of ensuring that the horrors of recent years will never happen again. You don't want to have to go through this again. 8 years ago, I came to this region on a very special first trip abroad as the President of the United States. I came here very early at your request. I addressed the leaders of the Arab and Muslim world gathered in Saudi Arabia and said that it was time to build a future free of the grip of extremism and terror. And I'm interestingly, right now, as soon as I'm finished, I'm quite late. You've kept me quite late between opposition leaders and Bibi's brilliant but very long speech. I thought I was going to run up here, make a speech, and then head to Egypt.
It didn't work out, though. And you made a pretty long one, too, sir.
Yeah, so did we, actually, as it goes.
But I liked what you all said. It could be worse. Supposing I, on top of it, I didn't like what you said. That would be no good, Ron, would it? Ron, you did a great job, by the way, Ron.
Absolutely no danger of that happening. The two people who did something that he didn't like were summarily removed from the chamber, to which they had, in fact, been democratically elected.
So I'm going to be meeting, actually, in a little while, I'm going to be meeting with the most powerful, the richest nations, really, in the world, although now, with the tariffs, the United States is by far the richest nation in the world, as you probably have been reading. But the richest nations, most powerful nations, tremendous, headed by some tremendous people in many cases. Some cases I wouldn't say necessarily I would endorse. But I will tell you, some incredible people that really helped us make this all possible. So I'll be going there. I'll be quite late. They might not be there by the time I get there. But we're going to give it a shot. But the journey we started back then led to the crushing defeat of the ISIS caliphate, to the monumental Abraham Accords, and ultimately to the historic ceasefire this week, in which many of those same nations really played a very pivotal role, I have to tell you. Steve will tell you that. Jared will tell you that. Together, we've shown that peace is not just a hope that we can dream about. It's a reality we can build upon day by day, person by person, and nation by nation. And because of that, the Middle East is finally ready to embrace its extraordinary potential. You have extraordinary potential in this region. It should now be clear to everyone throughout the region that decades of fomenting terrorism and extremism, jihadism and anti-Semitism have not worked. They haven't worked. They've been a disaster. They've just killed. They've killed. They've backfired completely and totally. They've just totally backfired. Everything that you thought, take it worst case, it's turned out to be worse than that. They have not worked. From Gaza to Iran, those bitter hatreds have delivered nothing but misery, suffering, failure, and death. They've served not to weaken Israel, but to annihilate the very forces that did the most to foment this hatred. And it's really, I mean, everybody that's tried it has become irrelevant. Meanwhile, we've seen those nations that set aside their differences, reached across ancient divides, and pursued engagement are now among the most successful in the region. They're getting along with Israel, and they're doing great. And I can tell you, the four nations that joined the Abraham Accords early on, and you'd all be doing me a favor, and I'm going to be saying this in a little while to some other friends, would love you all to, is this right, Jared, join up in the Abraham Accords. We have to join up and get together. You can have that whole thing filled out. We had a very weak administration, worst president in the history of our country by far. And Barack Obama was not far behind, by the way. And they did nothing with this incredible document, the Abraham Accords, but now you can fill them up. Now you have peace. You have people that really like Israel. I'll tell you what. And they like Israel a lot more today than they did even 5 weeks ago. You've made a lot of, you've come back. You've come back strong, because it was getting to be a little nasty out there in the world. And ultimately, the world wins. You can't beat the world. I would say to Bibi, Bibi, it's now time. And he understood it better than anybody, because ultimately, you know, the world's a very big place. And I've said a lot. I said, this piece of land is very small. It's unbelievable what you've done with that tiny. You look at a map, even of just not the world, the Middle East, and you have this little dot. And think of what you've done. It's incredible. It's incredible. But the world is loving. The world is loving Israel again. And I said to baby, you know, the world is big and it's strong. And Ron, ultimately, the world wins. And we don't have to worry about that now. But there was getting to be a period of time over the last few months. You know, the world wanted peace and Israel wanted peace. Everybody did. Everybody did. And what a victory it's been, right? What a victory it's been. If you would have gone on for 3-4 more years, keep fighting, it was getting bad. It was getting heated. The timing of this is brilliant. And I said, Bibi, you're going to be remembered for this far more than if you kept this thing going, kill. It would be not be the same. And I just want to congratulate you for having the courage to say, that's it. We've won.
That was an interesting bit there. Muted support, slightly at odds with the narrative that the entire event has been dedicated to. Trump coming very close to boasting about essentially strong-arming Netanyahu into this moment.
And the choice for Palestinians could not be more clear. This is their chance to turn forever from the path of terror and violence. It's been extreme to exile the wicked forces of hate that are in their midst, and I think that's going to happen. I've met some people over the last couple of months that want to see it happen very much. And after tremendous pain and death and hardship, now is the time to concentrate on building their people up instead of trying to tear Israel down. We don't want that to happen again. And the total focus of Gazans must be on restoring the fundamentals of stability, safety, dignity, and economic development so they can finally have the better life that their children really do deserve after all these decades of horror. I intend to be a partner in this effort in the sense that we're going to help and we're going to do something that became unbelievably popular. Everybody wants to be on it. It's called the Board of Peace, okay? How about that? Is that a beautiful name? Like a board of peace.
It's like a board of peace.
The only bad thing from my standpoint, every single nation involved has asked me to be the chair. And I'll tell you, I'm very busy. I didn't count on that. But you know what? If we do it, we'll do it right. And we have unbelievable power and wealth. Because you're going to need wealth. You're going to need wealth to rebuild things. And they have wealth like few people have wealth. I want to thank the Arab and Muslim nations for their commitment that they've made to support a safe rebuilding of Gaza and beyond. I have many Arab countries, very wealthy countries, that came up and said, we'll put up tremendous amounts of money to get rebuilt Gaza, and I think that's going to happen. The power, they want dignity, they want to come forward, and they want to say, and I want to say who they are, because what they're doing is going to be, I think, something that you're going to be very impressed with, Bibi, and you need that. You need the kind of economic power that they have, and they want to see it work, and they want to see it be safe, and they want to see it be good for Israel, too. And as much money as it will be, and it's a lot, as you can see, it's a lot. For these countries, it's relatively little relative to their worth. It's really a lot of money like most people could never even conceive. But for these countries, it's not that much, especially because it ensures success and stability in the Middle East, which is what they want to see. So many of them will be with us in Egypt in a little while, I think. I'm not sure. They may be gone. They may have taken their Boeing 747s and left. I said, what kind of a plane do you fly? 747. I said, that's a large plane. No, they may have. Steve, do you think they've left on their brand new Boeing 747s? Or, I don't know. We're going to find out soon. It's going to be a big story. There'll be two people left. And they'll be the two poorest ones. But it will be the wealthiest and most powerful group of nations. So the group that we have assembled, that's waiting for us, is the wealthiest and most powerful group ever assembled at one time. There has never been a group like this. And they're only looking for good. They want good. They're going to do good. And as those commitments are made, I'm going to let the world know who's doing it, because they really deserve to get the credit. And some of them probably won't want the credit, but they deserve it. It's more obvious than ever that the productive and responsible nations of this region should not be enemies or adversaries. You should be partners and eventually even friends. And that's what's going to happen. I know it. Together, you can stand against the forces of chaos. Yeah, you go ahead. That's an important point. Because you can stand against the forces of chaos that threatened all of your interests, and it's always a big threat, always a big threat, and unleash incredible prosperity and opportunity for all the people of these lands. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to unleash numbers and success the likes of which Israel has never been able to think of, because you're so firm, and you should be, and you've done the right thing in defending yourself. You're not going to have to worry so much about it. You've won, and now you can build, and you can do things that you never even thought possible. It's going, when you put that genius into doing something else, it's going to be something that's, it's going to be a miracle. The miracle in the desert, it's going to be amazing. And it already is in a true sense. But it'll be wonderful when you can spend time thinking about other than war and defense and offense also. To that end, it's my firm hope and dream, frankly, that together the Abraham Accords will turn out to be everything that we thought they would. Those four countries were very, very brave in doing it. They did it at a very early point, and every single one of them benefits unbelievably financially. And if you noticed, even in this bad period that we just went through, they all remained a member of the Abraham Accords. They've done unbelievably well. And I just, and you know who you are, and I want to thank you. And they've stayed because of loyalty, but they've also stayed because it was really good business. They've made a lot of money being members. And you're going to all, I think, I hope that everyone of, I hope that every one of the countries that we're seeking, Jared, I hope they join quickly. No games, no nothing. Just join, get it. It's going to be a great peacemaker. It's really going to bring it together beyond anybody's wildest dream. So instead of building fortresses to keep enemies at bay, the nations of this region should be building infrastructure to weave your commerce closer together, because you've got to compete with a big world out there in commerce now. It's a different kind of competition. Instead of making weapons and missiles, the wealth of this region should flow to schools and medicine, industry, and frankly, the new hot thing, artificial intelligence. It's, boy, it's a lot of intelligence you're going to have to be throwing off to make, to pay back these sums of money that they're doing. But that's really the hot one. And I might say that the United States, a year ago, was a dead country. I say it to people. I heard it first from the King of Saudi Arabia. I then heard it from UAE. I heard it from Qatar. I heard it from many other countries. A year ago, the United States of America was a dead country. Now it's the hottest country anywhere in the world. It is the hottest. There's no question about it. In fact, if you go back a year ago, before the election, although once we had November 5th, we became hot because people got it. I would say November 5th was a time that we became really hot. But once you go back a couple of years, if I were in charge and the country was doing what they were, nobody was going to ask me to speak. Nobody asked Joe Biden to come up and speak, I guarantee you that. And if they did, he would have turned them down, I promise you. He didn't speak. He didn't speak, and he didn't speak well. But all of the countries in the Middle East, it could have, what we're doing now, it could have happened a long time ago, but it was strangled and set back almost irretrievably by the administrations of Barack Obama and then Joe Biden. It was, there was a hatred toward Israel. There was an absolute hatred. The setbacks really started when President Obama signed the Iran nuclear deal. This was a disaster for Israel, and it was a disaster for everyone. And I remember that Bibi Netanyahu came to the United States and worked so hard to try and get Obama not to do that deal. He worked so hard. But it was like talking to a wall. I remember him telling me it was like talking to a wall. They wanted to go with Iran. They chose Iran, frankly, over a lot of other good nations, but in specifically Israel. And that was the beginning of a very bad period of time. You had Obama go out and the Iran nuclear deal turned out to be a disaster. And by the way, I terminated the Iran nuclear deal, and I was very proud to do it. Yet even to Iran, whose regime has inflicted so much death on the Middle East, the hand of friendship and cooperation is open. I'm telling you, they want to make a deal. That's all I do in my life. I make deals. I'm good at it. I've always been good at it. And I know when they want. Even if they said, we don't want to make a deal, I can tell you they want to make a deal. All right? They do. They want to make a deal, and we're going to see if we can do something, because this is crazy what's happening, and we're not going to have this anymore. Neither the United States nor Israel bear the people of Iran any hostility. We merely want to live in peace. We don't want any looming threats over our heads, and we don't want to even think in terms of nuclear destruction. It's not going to happen. Never will happen. There's nothing that would do more good for this part of the world than for Iran's leaders to renounce terror, stop threatening their neighbors, quit funding their militant proxies, and finally recognize Israel's right to existence. They have to do that. They have to do that.
That's it from me for today.
And
Sheila
Iran,
Fogarty will issue, or possibly Tom Swarbrick will take
Iran,
over,
you know,
when
this
he's
is,
finished.
I said out of weakness. There's no weakness. But I'm going to say this, that we are ready when you are, and it will be the best decision that Iran has ever made. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And they're good people. I know a lot of Iranians in the United States. They're good people, smart, hardworking people. They don't want to see what's happened to their country. The story of fierce Israeli resolve and triumph since October 7th should be proof to the entire world that those who seek to destroy this nation are doomed to bitter failure. The state of Israel is strong, and it will live and thrive forever. And that is why Israel will always remain a vital ally of the United States of America. Israelis share our values, field one of the world's most powerful militaries. You really do. You have an amazing, what a job. What a job you've done. And have one of the most innovative economies on earth. Those are just a few of the reasons why I'm proud to be the best friend that Israel has ever had. And they all say it. In the White House, they all say it. I guess it's true because everybody says it, baby. You said it today. Thank you. But as president, I terminated the disastrous Iran nuclear deal, and ultimately I terminated Iran's nuclear program with things called B-2 bombers. It was swift, and it was accurate, and it was a military beauty. I authorized the spending of billions of dollars, which went to Israel's defense, as you know. And after years of broken promises from many other American presidents, you know that, they kept promising. I never understood it until I got there. There was a lot of pressure put on these presidents. It was put on me, too, but I didn't yield to the pressure. But every president for decades said, we're going to do it. The difference is I kept my promise and officially recognized the capital of Israel and moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. Isn't that right, Miriam? Look at Miriam. She's back there. Stand up, Miriam. Stand up. Miriam and Sheldon would come into the office. They'd call me. I think they had more trips to the White House than anybody else I could think of. Look at her sitting there so innocently. She's got $60 billion in the bank, $60 billion. I think she's saying no more. And she loves Israel, but she loves it. And they would come in, and her husband was a very aggressive man, but I loved him. He was a very aggressive, very supportive of me. And he'd call up, can I come over and see you? I say, Sheldon, I'm the president of the United States. It doesn't work that way. He'd come in through the window. But they were very responsible for so much, including getting me thinking about Golan Heights, which is probably one of the greatest things to ever happen to Israel. Stand up, please. She really is. I mean, she loves this country. She loves this country. Her and her husband are so incredible. We miss him so dearly. But I actually asked her, I'm going to get her in trouble with this, but I actually asked her once. I said, so Miriam, I know you love Israel. What do you love more, the United States or Israel? She refused to answer. That means, that might mean Israel, I must tell you. We love you. Thank you, darling, for being here. That's a great honor. Great honor. She's a wonderful woman. She is a great woman. I've always stood for the people of this community, and I always will. I'll always be with you. I'm always going to be with you. I guess maybe something could happen to change my mind. Somebody that's really stupid gets into office and wants to do really bad things, but that's about it. We don't think we're going to have that happen. I hope we're not going to have that happen. And this man is a good man right here. These two men are good men right here. Hey, I have an idea. Mr. President, why don't you give him a pardon? Give him a pardon. Come on. Speeches, you probably know. But I happen to like this gentleman right over here, and it just seems to make so much sense. You know, whether we like it or not, this has been one of the greatest wartime presidents. This has been one of the greatest wartime presidents. And cigars and champagne, who the hell cares about that? Enough controversy for the day, right? It's actually, I don't think it's very controversial. So, you know, I mean, I see so popular. You are a very popular man. You know why? Because you know how to win. Over the past 2 years, I've met many of the families of the Israelis taken hostage and those that were taken hostage. Unbelievable. I've looked into their eyes. I've seen the worst nightmares of their suffering. But I've also seen something else, the beautiful love of the people, the love of people, frankly, that hold things together, the love that gives you the courage to carry on through thousands of years of persecution and repression, and to emerge with the heart of David. It's the heart of David. It's that love that's defeated the enemies of civilization, built this incredible country and this unbelievable economy, and forged one of the great democracies of the world. That is why it's a true honor to stand here today and address this assembly in your ancient and eternal now capital, Jerusalem. I'm proud to have helped in that regard. This city and this nation stand as living proof that a much brighter future for this entire region is truly within our grasp. For thousands of years, Jerusalem has been a home to Christians, Jews, Muslims, and people of all ethnicities and creeds. This is the holy center of the world's three great Abrahamic faiths. I like that too. Adorned, it's the first time I've seen that word in a while. Adorned with their sacred sites and alive with their pilgrims and visitors from every corner of the globe. But here between the Western Wall, the Temple Mount, and the hill called Calvary, people of every faith and background live, work, pray, serve, and raise their families side by side, and they do it with love. This example is just one of the modern miracles that Israel has given to the world. And just in closing, the leaders in this chamber know better than anyone else the challenges of this harmony, and it's been